Chapter 39. Celebration on a Gray Day. On Saturday, the 15th of November, the morning after his fourth night with Skinner, Yamazaki, wearing an enormous cape-like plaid jacket, much mended and smelling of candle grease, descended in the yellow lift to do business with the dealers in artifacts. He brought with him a cardboard carton containing several large fragments of petrified wood, the left antler of a buck deer, 15 compact discs, a Victorian promotional novelty in the shape of a fluted china mug embossed with the letters OXO, and a damp swollen copy of the Columbia Literary History of the United States. The sellers were laying out their goods, the morning iron gray and clammy, and he was grateful for the borrowed jacket, its pockets silted with ancient sawdust and tiny, nameless bits of hardware. He had been curious about the correct manner in which to approach them, but they took the initiative, clustering around him, Skinner's name on their lips. The petrified wood brought the best price, then the mug, then 8 of the compact discs. It all went, finally, except for the literary history, which was badly mildewed. He placed this, its blue boards warping in the salt air, atop a mound of trash. With the money folded in his hand, he went looking for the old woman who sold eggs. Also, they needed coffee. He was in sight of the place that roasted and ground coffee when he saw Fontaine coming through the morning bustle, the collar of his long tweed coat turned up against the fog. "How's the old man doing, Scooter?"
"He asks more frequently after the girl."
"She's in jail down in L.A., Fontaine said.
"Jail?"
"Out on bail this morning, or that's what she said last night. I was on my way over to bring you this."
He took a phone from his pocket and handed it to Yamazaki.
"She has that number. Just don't go making too many calls home, you hear?"
"Home?"
"Japan."
Yamazaki blinked. "Oh, no, I understand."
"I don't know what she's been up to since that storm hit, but I've been too busy to bother thinking about it. We got the power back, but I've still got an injury case nobody's bothered to claim yet. Fished him out of what was left of somebody's greenhouse. Wednesday morning, sort of down under your place there, actually. Don't know if he hit his head or what, but he just keeps coming around a little and fading off. Vital signs okay, no broken bones. Got a burn along his side, could be from a bullet. Some kind of hot shoe load."
"You would not take him to a hospital?"
"Nah," Fontaine said. "We don't do that unless they ask us to, or unless they're going to die otherwise. A lot of us have good reason not to go to places like that, get checked out on computers and all."
"Ah,"
Yamazaki said, with what he hoped was tact.
"Ah, so,"
Fontaine said. "Some kids probably found him first, took his wallet if he had one. But he's a big, healthy brother, and somebody will recognize him eventually. Hard not to with that bolt through his Johnson."
"Yes," Yamazaki said, failing to understand this last. "And I still have your pistol."
Fontaine looked around. "Well, if you feel like you don't need it, just chuck it for me. But I'll need that phone back sometime. How long are you going to be staying out here anyway?"
I do not know."
And it was true. "You'll be down here this afternoon, see the parade?"
"Parade?"
"November 15th. It's Shapley's birthday. Something to see. Sort of Mardi Gras feel to it. A lot of the younger people take their clothes off, but I don't know about this weather. Well, see you around. Say hi to Skinner."
"Hi, yes,"
Yamazaki said, smiling, as Fontaine went on his way, the rainbow of his crocheted cap bobbing above the heads of the crowd. Yamazaki walked toward the coffee vendor, remembering the funeral procession, the dancing scarlet figure with its red-painted rifle, the symbol of Shapley's going. Shapley's murder, some said sacrifice, had taken place in Salt Lake City. His 7 killers, heavily armed fundamentalists, members of a white racist sect driven underground in the months following the assault on the airport, were still imprisoned in Utah. Though 2 of them had subsequently died of AIDS, possibly contracted in prison, steadfastly refusing the viral strain patented in Shapley's name, they had remained silent during the trial, their leader stating only that the disease was God's vengeance on sinners and the unclean. Lean men with shaven heads and blank, implacable eyes, they were God's gunmen and would stare as such from all the tapes of history forever. But Shapley had been very wealthy when he had died, Yamazaki thought, joining the line for coffee. Perhaps he had even been happy. He had seen the product of his blood reverse the course of darkness. There were other plagues abroad now.
but the live vaccine bred from Shapley's variant had saved uncounted millions. Yamazaki promised himself that he would observe Shapley's birthday parade. He would remember to bring his notebook. He stood in the smell of fresh ground coffee, awaiting his turn.
The End. You've been listening to Virtual Light by William Gibson, narrated by Frank Muller.